Welcome to Liminal Church. Welcome to all those tuning in online as well. I'm glad you're here. And I'm deeply grateful, even if there's just a few folks here, to have the honor of getting to co-create a sacred space with you here for Contemplative Sunday. If anyone's new here, my name is Andrew. I'm one of seven volunteer members of the teaching team here, so one of a variety of faces and voices you'll see. And one of our practices that we have here at Liminal is to take one Sunday each month and really set it aside as a time for contemplation. So rather than the quote-unquote normal church things, singing songs, making announcements, hearing a teaching, and all that, we take time to slow down, to sit in silence, reflect on our lives, pray, and hopefully receive some measure of peace and healing and love. Now, normally we do this on the last Sunday of every month. So if you usually like to skip Contemplative Sundays and are showing up today expecting a normal service, I won't be offended if you leave. Now's your chance. And speaking of leaving, do I need to dismiss the kids?
No?
Okay, we're good. Thanks. All right. Well, this morning, for our time together, I've prepared things to revolve around a poem from one of my favorite poets, Mary Oliver, who I like to affectionately call the other Saint Mary, with all due respect to Mary, the mother of Jesus, of course. But as far as I'm concerned, I really do believe Mary Oliver is a saint in her own way. Even though she never explicitly claimed Christianity as her faith, as far as I know, Oliver's poetry reflects the heart of an ardent, sincere mystic, someone rapturously in love with and full of wonder at the world God has made. A lifelong spiritual seeker, her poetry tangles with the deep mysteries of life and honors the reality that each person carries within them the imago Dei, the image of God, a divine spark that nothing can fully stamp out. As a Christian, I found that her poems have deeply enriched my own faith and spirituality, so I feel good about offering this in a church setting. Now, the poem I'd like to invite you to meditate on with me this morning is called At the River Clarion. Hopefully you grabbed a copy of it on your way in. If not, raise your hand. I have a few extras up here. Looks like everyone's good to go. Great. Or they're sitting out on the table out there. So one reason I was drawn to this poem and wanted to take time to sit with it this morning is because I find that it invites the readers into this tension or paradox. So first, take note of the title, At the River Clarion. Here's the definition of clarion, according to Merriam-Webster. Brilliantly clear, or loud and clear. Now, the context in which you often hear this word is clarion call. Perhaps you've heard that. It's clear. You can't miss it. So to title a poem At the River Clarion suggests that it's going to take the reader into a place of clarity, right? That its message will be loud and clear. And I could really go for that right now. With the world in the state that it's in, and if I'm honest with my faith in the state that it's in, some days I long for clarity, for moral clarity, spiritual clarity, a clarity in my sense of life direction and purpose. And I think that's a good desire. But now, go ahead and look at the first line of the poem. I don't know who God is exactly. What? Mary Oliver, what's going on here? I thought this poem was going to be about clarity, and right out of the gate, you're telling me you don't know who God is exactly. What's up with that? Well, she's acknowledging mystery, unknowability, the ultimate otherness of God that is beyond human comprehension. This opening line actually makes me, coupled with the title of the poem, makes me think of a bit from one of my favorite comedians, Pete Holmes. Here's how he puts it.
Like, my God is not an old man in the sky. It's a metaphor for a mystery that absolutely transcends all categories of human thought, including being and non-being, but that's too many words for the back of a quarter. That's Joseph Campbell. I got all the best teachers later in life, like Barry Taylor, the road manager for AC/DC, said, God is the name of the blanket we put over the mystery to give it a shape. Shouldn't I have learned that in church? Why am I learning this from Barry Taylor, the road manager for AC/DC? Like, my God is not an old...
You go to the next slide. I'm glad that got a little chuckle. We have this tendency, I know, to make contemplative spaces all solemn and serious, but it can be funny too. I've heard that a lot of monasteries are actually places of a lot of laughter. Like, the monks are just cracking each other up all the time. But anyways, I share that because I really do love that quote from Barry Taylor, and I think it sets the table for our time together this morning well. God is the name of the blanket we throw over mystery to give it a shape. And yet, amid the mystery, amid the journey, amid whatever cosmic and spiritual process in which we find ourselves in this life, I still hold hope that it is possible to find clarity. Moral clarity, spiritual clarity, personal clarity for ourselves in terms of who we are, what our lives are meant to be about. And I suspect this is what Jesus is getting at when, in the middle of sharing parables and some of his most cryptic teachings, he says, "Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear." And my hope, my belief, is that it is possible to hear. And it's possible, at times, in certain seasons, to have clarity. So with that, I'd like to invite you to take a walk with Mary Oliver down to the River Clarion this morning and spend some time listening to God wherever his voice may be found. Now, this is a long poem, so for the purposes of this morning, I'm going to break it up into four parts. So after reading each part, I'll offer a few prompts for reflection up on the screen, and we'll take some time to sit with this poem and with these questions in silence. That's how we'll move through this morning. All right, let's begin. At the River Clarion by Mary Oliver. I don't know who God is exactly, but I'll tell you this. I was sitting in the river named Clarion on a water splash stone, and all afternoon I listened to the voices of the river talking. Whenever the water struck a stone, it had something to say, and the water itself, and even the mosses trailing under the water. And slowly, very slowly, it became clear to me what they were saying. Said the river, "I am part of holiness." And I too, said the stone. And I too, whispered the moss beneath the water. I'd been to the river before, a few times, Don't blame the river that nothing happens quickly. You don't hear such voices in an hour or a day. You don't hear them at all if selfhood has stuffed your ears. And it's difficult to hear anything anyway through all the traffic, the ambition. So as we sit with these lines, some things to consider. What voices in your life have you taken time to truly hear? This could be a person, something in nature. Is there anyone or anything that the Spirit may be inviting you to listen to more closely? Another question, it's a big one. If someone were to ask you, who is God, how would you answer? And do you think your response says more about God or about you? Let's reflect on these things. Thank you. continuing at the river. If God exists, he isn't just butter and good luck. He's also the tick that killed my wonderful dog, Luke. Said the river, imagine everything you can imagine, then keep on going. Imagine how the lily, who may also be a part of God, would sing to you if it could sing, if you would pause to hear it. And how are you so certain anyway that it doesn't sing? If God exists, he isn't just churches and mathematics. He's the forest. He's the desert. He's the ice caps that are dying. He's the ghetto and the Museum of Fine Arts. He's Van Gogh and Allen Ginsberg and Robert Motherwell. He's the many desperate hands cleaning and preparing their weapons. He's every one of us, potentially. The leaf of grass, the genius, the politician, the poet. And if this is true, isn't it something very important? Yes, it could be that I am a tiny piece of God, and each of you too, or at least of his intention and hope, which is a delight beyond measure. I don't know how you get to suspect such an idea. I only know that the river kept singing. It wasn't a persuasion. It was all the river's own constant joy, which was better by far than a lecture, which was comfortable, exciting, unforgettable. As we sit with this, I wonder, what beautiful expressions of the divine, such as the lily we read about here, are singing to you in your day-to-day life? What wonder and beauty and praise do they sing of? Or consider how you yourself are the embodied intention and hope of God. In what ways do you see this to be true? Let this fill your heart with delight. Continuing on in part three. Of course, for each of us, there is the daily life. Let us live it, gesture by gesture. When we cut the ripe melon, should we not give it thanks? And should we not thank the knife also? We do not live in a simple world. There was someone I loved who grew old and ill. One by one, I watched the fires go out. There was nothing I could do except to remember that we receive, then we give back. It's been said that the key to being a saint is simply to do the next right thing. You can go to the prompts, Jared. As we live life gesture by gesture, can you discern this for your life today? What is the next right thing for you to do? Or, in the words of Father Richard Rohr, he says, all great spirituality is about letting go, receiving, giving back. Is there anything you have received that the Spirit might be inviting or perhaps preparing you to let go of and to give back? Let's sit with these things. made it to the final part of our journey, the last three sections. My dog Luke lies in a grave in the forest. She is given back. But the River Clarion still flows from wherever it comes from to where it has been told to go. I pray for the desperate earth. I pray for the desperate world. I do the little each person can do. It isn't much. Sometimes the river murmurs, sometimes it raves. Along its shores were, may I say, very intense cardinal flowers, and trees and birds that have wings to uphold them, for heaven's sakes. The lucky ones, they have such deep natures. They are so happily obedient. While I sit here in a house filled with books, ideas, doubts, hesitations. And still, pressed deep into my mind, the river keeps coming, touching me, passing by on its long journey, its pale, infallible voice singing. As a writer and someone who loves to collect books, I feel particularly called out by that line in section 6, sitting there in a house filled with books. So I've heard it said that a tree glorifies God simply by being itself and living according to its nature. If this is true for all creatures, the trees, the birds, the flowers, what does your unique, happy obedience before God look like? Is it possible? Are there ways that this might not have a one-size-fits-all answer for each of us? And finally, if you could offer a prayer for our desperate world, what would your prayer be? Perhaps use this time to offer that to God. Thank you for taking that journey together. I know poetry isn't everyone's cup of tea, but I think it's valuable, and hopefully you found something insightful or life-giving or refreshing this morning. Now, as we wrap up our time, we'll finish our service with communion. If you go to the next slide, Jared. So according to the Gospel of John, shortly before being arrested and crucified, Jesus prayed, "I ask not only on behalf of these," meaning his disciples, "but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one. As you, Father, are in me and I am in you, may they also be in us." I like what the chaplain and writer Terry McDowell Ott has to say about this prayer. She writes, "Being in Jesus is John's theological language to describe a state of communion essential for our faith. In the Eastern Church, Christians view this state of communion as salvation itself, something that can happen throughout our lives, not just when we die. It's a state to being so intimately connected to Christ that this connection shapes everything about who we are and how we live our lives." She says, "For John, communion with Christ is essential because it leads us to being in communion with others. If we love God and if we are communing with God, then this will lead us to loving and communing with our brothers and sisters. If we love God and are communing with God, then we will find God in one another." And I would add to that, to use Mary Oliver's words, that we will also find God in the forest, in the desert, the river, all the way down to the leaf of grass. So the communion that we celebrate and proclaim here at the table in this sacrament today doesn't end here in this room. It's always expanding, going to the wayside, reverberating through our lives, inviting more and more people and more of life to share in the divine union. If the ushers want to come up. So as far as directions, how this works here at Liminal, everyone, regardless of where you're coming from, what you're bringing in today, all are invited and welcome at the table. Whenever you're ready, please walk up one of these two inner aisles. You can take either, we have gluten-free crackers or bread that has been prepared, and a cup. The usher will pour the juice, alcohol-free grape juice, into the cup, and then use the outer aisles on the outside of the seats to return to your seat. So in your own time, when you're ready, see people are already starting, you can eat the cracker and drink the juice. And after the service, please leave your cup at the coffee bar. And if for any reason it's difficult for you to walk up, please raise your hand and myself or an usher will bring communion to you. My friends, this is the body and blood of Christ, broken and shed for you. Come to the table. Thank you again for being here this morning. If you would like to linger, take a little more time in this space of silence and contemplation, you're welcome to stay, hang out here in the sanctuary. Jenny, are you or Joyce here available for prayer in the back afterwards? Yes, if you're in need of prayer for anything, Jenny will be available in the back for a while after the service. If you do want to talk to people, please take your conversations out into the coffee bar area or foyer so we can maintain this space of silence in the sanctuary a little bit longer. Now to close, I'd like to offer you this this word, this account from the autobiography of St. Ignatius of Loyola, which I offer as a benediction, writing about an experience of his. He says, "As he sat by the river, the eyes of his understanding began to be opened. Not that he saw any vision, but he understood and learnt many things, and this with so great an enlightenment that everything seemed new to him." May this be so for each one of us. Go in peace.